This is CliffCentral.com.
Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law. Like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
Sanbonani, I'm Gary Hertzberg, and this is The Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. Joining me again is Kate Pater.
Hi, Gary. Hello, everybody. Lovely to be back.
And Duncan Mabaso.
Happy Valentine's Day, everyone.
And to you, Duncan.
Thank you.
Duncan, what did you get up to?
Just a bit of loving, Gary.
I think that's probably X-rated.
Yeah. Duncan only got a bit of loving. Okay, so today we're going to be discussing a very touchy topic for many of us South Africans. It's one of those you believe could never happen to you. It's one of those that always happens to someone else. It's about losing your job. The dreaded R word is what I call it, and it's something that no one ever wants to hear. Yes, today's show, the R word stands for retrenchment or redundancy, something that's enough to make any grown man or woman cry, for that matter.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're at quite a scary time at the moment, and this is becoming more and more prevalent, and it's reality for a lot of people.
Yeah, the unemployment rates are shocking. People are really sitting around without work, as we know.
Well, that's it. And they have been sitting at that level. And now with all of the retrenchments and the redundancies we've got a whole workforce out there and not enough jobs to accommodate them.
On today's show, Kate, we're going to be speaking to two guests who have had the misfortune of being made redundant, they themselves. It's about their struggle, their story, and where they've landed up today. Let's welcome Gillian Linsell. Welcome, Gillian.
Thank you, Gary. Hi.
And Jackie Perkis.
Hi, thank you.
Good. Later in the show, we're going to be talking to Jackie about law on the subject and how you can maximize your benefits if your employer is trying to get rid of you. Am I right, Jackie?
That's right. Thanks,
excellent,
Gary.
If you want to join in with us, our phone number as usual, 0861-555-189. You can message us or you can tweet us.
Yes, at Hertzlaw, H-E-R-T-Z-L-A-W.
Good. Let's talk to you firstly, Jill. You're a single mom.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
You were single as a single mom from when your kids were little.
Yeah, my youngest was two, up until about 7 years old. So, yeah, single mom.
You have three daughters, beautiful daughters they are now. At the time we're going to be talking, your daughters were what, just early teens?
Early teens. My baby would probably be 8 years old at the time, so... Very needy.
Yeah, you said 8, 10 and
12. 8, 10 and 12, yeah.
Like okay, so you got a great job with a friend.
I did. I actually had an absolutely superb position. I got it by just looking and seeing that there was an opportunity. I got into the business with this gentleman who ran a branding activation company. And I changed all the systems and soon found myself running the entire show. As I say, absolutely excellent position that I had. I loved my work. I loved the people. I loved the clients. I had it cushy. I'll tell you that quite honestly. I kind of worked my own hours. I worked hard, but I had an awesome life. I really and truly did. I even had a beautiful home on the premises of the company that was out in Midrand.
Yeah, that's a big advantage today.
Big advantage.
Yeah.
I drove a lovely car.
Whose car was it?
It was a company car.
Yeah.
The company paid for it. The company paid for everything. It was a dream job.
Was the company making money when you joined it? Or did it start making?
It had started making money, and that's why he needed assistance. He needed to grow it, and that's when I stepped in. And I did. I ran it for close on 6 years. Making huge amounts of money.
I suppose being on the property, Jill, you worked longer hours than most because you didn't have to worry about
commuting.
Traffic, yeah.
Yeah. And I was, but yeah. I was there, and yeah. I could be. It really was cushy, though. The girls were close to school, and they were also close to their father, who lived nearby. So
everything fell into place.
Everything fell into place. The girls went to horse riding lessons down the road, and it really and truly was fabulous.
Okay, so for 6 years, this was the way life was for you. Beautiful,
yes, stunning, yeah,
lovely. You, 1 year, at the end of the year, you went to Plett.
That's right. I went on holiday, took my girls, was with my family, friends, and we went down to Plett, and I was on the beach, and I got an SMS from the guy who ran the company to say that the company's closing down. He can no longer, or has no interest in it for that matter. He is looking elsewhere, has other interests, and I needn't bother to come back to work.
Oh, my word. That's it?
That's it.
That's how he... That's wanted to sever this relationship.
That's quite shocking,
you.
Hey? After 5 years, not being broken up with via SMS, even worse. I mean, being retrenched via SMS.
So, Jill, was the company making profits at that time?
The company was making huge profits.
So, where was the money going?
He was opening and looking at other endeavors that he was interested in, and
siphoning off.
And he was the thing that he was creating was just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and. That's where he wanted to focus, and very short-sighted, I must be honest, because we were a really strategic part of a lot of companies, big companies, in terms of...
I mean, what kind of clients did you have at that time?
Oh, big clients, Engine, Old Mutual, you name it. And we did all their brand activation, managing their branding, which is a very important thing. Branding,
absolutely.
The brand and name of a company. I was also fortunate. I used to be doing all the merchandising for the big concerts. So all the bands and all the artists that used to come to South Africa, I was managing their merchandise.
Who did you get to see?
And getting backstage passes.
Yes, and going on tour with them.
Oh,
and
like who? In those days?
In those days, it was Enrique.
He's still quite hot.
Yes. Yeah. Avril Lavigne.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Brian Adams, I mean, he used to come out so often, I think people thought that he was actually a South African. He was here. Yeah. But that was a lovely part of my life. REM, and in those instances, again, I was making serious money for this company.
Mm. And that's a big perk.
A big perk.
So a house, a car, concert tickets, amazing job, flexible
exactly,
hours.
Exactly.
Sounds like the perfect position.
Yeah. But then, as
it
you
makes
say,
no sense that he wanted to close it down. That doesn't.
I know. It's you can't argue.
I mean, when you got this SMS, where were you actually? Were you on the beach?
I was on the beach.
So who did you turn to and say, "Look what I've just got"?
Well, at first I just thought it was a kind of a joke, and that he might be drunk. And I did take a second look, and I was on the beach and played Rockburg Beach, and I then. My brother was with me at the time, and I told him, and it was just absolute shock. You don't realize, it's unbelievable. You've got to like pinch yourself and go, "Well, this is genuine." And I speak about this, is that that red carpet was literally just ripped out from underneath my
feet.
What
age were you then, Jill?
I was 40, Gary.
So the fear of losing your job at 40 and having to find something else is nearly insurmountable, isn't it?
Well, absolutely, because I was out of what I was really, my trade is copywriting and advertising, and I'd been out of that game for quite some time doing the branding activation. So very difficult to try and get back into an agency again and just slot back in again when you've missed. If you don't keep up reinventing yourself, you're not going to be able to. So I was really at my wit's end. I had nothing.
Not a nice way to start a holiday in Plett, was it?
No.
So did you phone the guy or try and phone him?
I did. He didn't take my calls.
Really?
It was just a dead stop. And then just to make matters worse, I moved in with friends and
So you were still living in the house, obviously.
Yes.
When you got back, was your stuff still in the house?
Well, it was, and it is. I mean, he wasn't around, so I could move out and
he
get my
act together. Get out as well?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, that became quite clear.
What happened to the company car?
Well, I was still driving that. Obviously, it was in my possession, and I had tried to have discussions with him via other people and via letters and emails that I could take over the car, perhaps, take over the payments. And then to my absolute shock and horror, I had the sheriff of the court, or not even the sheriff, it was a detective coming to lay a charge.
One of these repo people or a proper...
It was a proper policeman.
Yeah.
And he came to my house, and there was a claim, and that he was, I'd fraudulently signed the papers for the car, and there was a charge of fraud.
Brought against you. Yes. So you're jobless, and now you have a criminal charge against you.
And I have a policeman detective at my door with my children seeing this. It was absolutely
devastating.
So, Jill,
you didn't have the advantage of confronting the man and saying, hold on a second, I've been making profits. Why are you doing this?
No, he didn't.
So what about going to a labor lawyer or a labor consultant? Why not do something like that? Or,
you know, I think you're scared, and you think, well, what can I do? You also hear horrible things, not horrible things, but negative things, like, oh, you don't stand a chance, you'll just wait in queues, you won't get any assistance. Bear in mind, it's 9 years ago, Gary. I'm sure things may have changed now, but it was just a case of, oh gosh, all right, in hindsight, I should have.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think it's just a case of my nature. I just plow on and get up and just move on and make a plan, because you don't have time literally to go see CCMA. You've got to just go and get a job again and go and get some money and work and keep food on the table.
How did you tell your kids?
I think I kind of hid it from them, because it's very hurtful. It's you feel like you've done something wrong.
You feel like a failure.
You feel like a loser. Yeah.
And they're like, they don't understand. They look at you and go, well, what did you do, mommy? You know, that you got fired. So no, I didn't get fired. But, you know, in their minds, that's how they see it. And you do, you feel helpless, and you feel let down, and all those emotions that you would feel in any type of tragedy.
Yeah.
You go through it. And
this is one of those where you thought it could never happen to you.
Absolutely. Never.
Never.
Gary, I thought this was my dream job, and I would do it forever and ever and ever.
Yeah. I guess there's a kind of shock and denial, disbelief that you feel when you get that SMS, you're like,
well, it is.
How's this happening?
And then I did. For a long time, I thought he'd come to his senses and he'd realize that he's throwing away not just me, but an awesome company.
So, Jill, where does one go from there? How do you cope with it? I think that's why we do these shows, because we try and create awareness. And we look to people like yourself and we say, well, how did you handle it? What do you do? You're a single mom. I mean, did you have any money in the bank, or were you kind of living month to month?
I was living month to month, and fortunately, once again, it's thanks to friends, Gary. I reached out to them, and I used them in a good way. And it's about networking, and it's about just keeping that resilience going. You, as I was saying before the show, Gary, it's actually a full-time job to find a job, and it's terribly disheartening. Seeking, sending out your CVs. Recruitment companies are notoriously bad at never getting back to you. Some of them, I believe, not understanding what job you're actually looking for. So it's hard, but you've got to just carry on and on and on, believing that you can get it.
One's got to overcome that feeling of worthlessness as
yes.
well.
And you've got to say,
that's a tough one. You've got to say, you know, I'm good.
That's it. And that's hard. And you've got to start believing in yourself again and saying, I can do this.
Yeah.
And have that attitude to say, you know what? I am. I'm going to wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I'm going to work solidly 2 hours like I would have in my other job that I had. And I'm going to focus on getting that dream job, or getting any job, or finding an opportunity, or making a coffee date to go network with somebody who might know somebody
else. How do you stay optimistic, Jill? It's so hard.
The million-dollar question.
How do you stay optimistic? Yeah.
I, as you know, as an inspirational, motivational speaker, Gary, and I also have to keep myself motivated. You start by looking at yourself in the morning and saying, I am jolly fabulous, and I will carry on, and I will put one foot in front of the next, and I will make it happen, and I will make it work. And until you start believing in yourself, that's when you're going to start flying.
How long did it take you to find some kind of gainful employment? And what did you do in that time? How did you live?
Gary, I was fortunate. I was invited to go and do a training course at Damlin on a public relations course. And whilst I was there at the orientation for lecturers, they asked me if I could possibly lecture business and marketing. And I said, Well, I didn't tell them. They didn't know that I'd actually washed the students' cars.
Jill, on that note, what have you done that's really beneath you?
Nothing, I think that's the thing, is that nothing's actually beneath any of us.
Well, what have you done that's very menial?
Oh, my gosh, Gary. A friend of mine had a promotion company, and she asked me to act as a regional manager up in Johannesburg, managing the promoters. And one of the promotions was a job at O.R. Tambo Airport, where they were giving water out to passengers that got off international flights. And the shifts were from 4 o'clock in the morning until like 8 o'clock. And not only was I managing the promoters, but I was actually putting the Madiba shirt on. And
so you could promote, get whatever it was,
yes,
per hour.
So I was getting the promoter fee and
the worker fee.
And my biggest fear was that
you'd be recognized.
Yeah, I was going to, somebody was going to see me there. And it was just, and I remember one of the promoters who is a really good friend of mine. He was also down and out at the time. Mm. I mean, we didn't have money to get out of the parking bay. If we hadn't been paid, we had to make sure
that we got paid before
and that you had cash. Mm. Gary, it's a horrible, horrible feeling to really not know
where the next pennies coming from.
You've got literally pennies. Mm. I remember one day one of our dogs was badly injured, had a fight with another dog, and this little thing was really cut up, and we took him to the local vet, and it was something like 200 rand and they wouldn't release him without me paying. I didn't have the money. I literally was going around the house through the girls' piggy banks to try and get the money, and we paid it in
but humbling.
It's terribly humbling, but you know what it does? It does make you stronger. It does make you actually realize the value of everything. And when I see people in corporates now and how frivolous they are about the jobs that they have, I'm not realizing, like you say, anything can change
overnight. For anybody, for a lawyer can lose his biggest client.
Exactly.
You know, anything can happen to anyone. And so if only we realize that. No, we don't believe it can.
No.
I had a lawyer friend who had an insurance company as a client, and he lived off them for years and years. There was a change in personnel, and the work was moved across to another lawyer, had to close his practice.
You see.
And he really suffered financially.
Sad.
Can happen to anyone, Kat.
Of course it can. None of us are above it. And I think the lesson is, while you are flying high, at least put away some of it into a nest egg, so that should you have the fall, at least there's a cushion.
Yeah. Who's this? Gab writes, I'm a sex worker and we never get retrenched. GAB, thanks. She's a gorgeous girl.
Well,
thanks, Gab.
Well, Gab, she says, maybe we should go into that industry.
She says your guests can get employed with us. Jill,
I think I'd rather do a promotion at the airport.
Yeah, absolutely. A mother's love knows no bounds, Jill. We may have to put you on the street, but not anymore. Not anymore, your story's got a wonderful ending, but we're going to keep it. We're going to hold our listeners because we want to know all about the applause that you get all over the place. People go mad for you. We've got a great speaker in studio today. We'll take you through Jill a little later. Let's talk to our second guest, who's also a fabulous woman. Her story's also got a happy ending, but it didn't when she was 17 and you ran away from home. Jackie Perkis, what happened to you?
Well, I was a young, rebellious woman. I think you referred to me as a hippie. You might have been slightly correct. And I just had enough of the parental monitoring and having to report and stuff. I've not really been good at that throughout my life.
You seem like quite a firecracker. I don't think
she's
you like instruction.
Yeah, she's a fiery redhead, Kate. Yeah.
Yes, we do have the red streak in our family. Yeah. So I moved away from home. I took a bag of books and a bag of shoes and no money. Borrowed a couple of hundred rand from a friend. Got a flat in Hillbrow. I loved Hillbrow in those days. We're talking the early 70s, mid-70s. And found a job with a publishing company as a receptionist. It was such an awful job. I mean, the fact that I failed typing from a trick really helped. you know, that I should really get a medal for. And I just hated the work. The work was meaningless. It had no pizzazz. It was boring. The workers were tired and grumpy all the time. Mm. Management was revolting. And so I moved a lot in my first formative years. I moved a lot around from one job to another, hopping here, hopping there, just trying to pay my rent.
But it was quite easy to find another
position. It was easy in those days. Unfortunately, we're talking the 70s here. Apartheid was alive and well, and white girls could do anything. And I was extremely lucky
that
way.
Did. Yeah.
And we did.
Hey, Gary, don't be naughty.
And then I found myself working as a temporary secretary in a large corporate, which grew and grew and grew over the years. And my first day, in fact, was quite momentous because I had promised this company that I knew exactly what their machinery was about. They had some weird and wonderful system. It took me, I think, 2 hours to find the on switch. And I kept pretending that I was working. Every time the door of the MD's office opened, I just huddled around the desk and pretended to be working. Couldn't find the on switch.
This was like being in one of those Schuster movies.
No, that's no, it was a comedy of errors. From
no
beginning
tipics
to
on
end.
The screen, though.
And no tipics on the screen. It was close. And then later in the day, I was appointed to work for the managing director and the chairman of this group of companies. And the chairman was a gigolo, an older man, probably my age now, very chic and well-dressed and just gorgeous, really. And he came up to my desk. I didn't know who he was. And he said, "I ordered somebody pretty." I was shocked.
I can imagine.
I was like, I stood up to my full height. You know, my full height is 5 feet. Fuck all, you know, bare feet. And I said, "Oh, I didn't know you wanted to fuck. I thought I was here to work."
And he fell in love with you.
He disappeared into his office and he didn't come out for the rest of the day. But from there on, we actually became good friends.
Did,
I worked
did he get
well
to have
with
sex
him.
With you in the end?
No, no I never got no, it. No. He only did blondes. No. He would have done capes.
You didn't get promoted.
Well, there we go. My life is complete.
You obviously didn't get promoted.
No, well, he sadly, I booked him on an airplane once and he died in a crash in Sabi. Yeah. So he didn't get to promote me. Yeah. But as the years went by, I did get promoted. I wanted the job of HR. I didn't really know what HR was about. I thought it was dealing with people. And in fact, one of my clients today has said, "I'm really glad you're not PR, because I'm not a very good PR. I'm quite firm in my HR work." I did get the job, and the agreement was I'd be paid a rand a month, and I would go to school. They would pay for my school. So I went
Could
to the
Could you live
IPM.
On a rand a month?
I couldn't live on a rand a month. It didn't last very long. It was kind of a silly joke, really.
Okay.
But then they paid me 2 rand. So I was very, very badly paid for a lot of my career with them, but I earned huge respect and I learned unbelievable amounts of stuff, streetwise stuff. I'm not degreed. I don't have very formal education other than a matric. I'm now an arbitrator that I got in 2008. I did that diploma, but I'm more streetwise. I've grown up on the street and I know how things work and I read voraciously. I read the law a lot.
Do you not think that actually experience stands you in better stead than the piece of paper? So the academic qualification.
I do believe it does. I started an MBA.
Yes.
In 2001. And had agreed with the chairman of the group that when I'd finished it, it was a 3-year course, I would then move out of the company into my own business.
Yes.
And he supported it, but he didn't share that information with the financial director. And he and I never saw eye to eye. And one day he just popped into my office and said, "I don't have great news for you." So I laughed and said, "Oh, are you retrenching me, are you?" And he said, "Yes."
Good God.
And I nearly fell off my chair. So I'd been there for 20 years. I was part of the furniture. And this guy just joined the company a few months before. And he was the most awful person. And that's what he did. He just walked out of my office and said, "Well, you can prepare the documentation and just get
it going." So you had to prepare your own retrenchment
package. I had to do my
own
retrenchment pretty much. But I did go and visit with the chairperson and said to him, this is just completely unacceptable. And if you treat people like this, it's going to filter down. And I can't be the custodian of that kind of treatment.
Did you take them on, the company?
Well, I negotiated my way through the retrenchment with the chairperson. I refused to deal with the FD after that.
Oh, for sure.
He did realise that I was going to go to the CCMA and possibly the Labour Court if it meant that. Mm. The laws have since changed quite dramatically. But I took away a year's salary.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Excellent.
I took away my entire suite, my office suite.
Mm. I love how gutsy that is.
Including the MD's chair, which I still sit on today. Hell of a uncomfortable.
Not the FD's, because that would have been poetic justice.
No, his chair would have made me vomit. And I took literally the entire office, all the files, everything, and outsourced on a 3-year contract with the company, which kept me going as I started the Fair Labour Practice.
And what did you decide to do immediately? I mean, when you were retrenched?
I didn't decide anything. I mean, I went home, got into pyjamas.
How did you feel when you were told that?
Went into
after
the
20
worst
years.
Depression. Yeah. I'm not a depressive kind of person, actually. I'm the eternal optimist, but this absolutely floored me.
Yeah.
I was enormously depressed. I woke up weeping. I went to sleep weeping. I felt, I guess, how people feel when they get divorced or they suddenly lose their partner to death or to terrible illness or something. That's how I felt. It was like this gnawing anxiety all the time.
Where to from now was what
it was horrible. I was 45 years old, white female with a sense of humor. What did that mean?
Quite a dry one at that.
So it took a few months, I must admit, for me to get out of my funk and find my mojo, as it were.
What did you tell your friends?
I've been retrenched. Mm. They were shocked and horrified. How could it happen to you? You've been there so long. You're part of the furniture. They were, are you sure you didn't steal something?
Mm.
You know, it was really awful.
Yeah.
And of course, they shared the loss with me very well, as did my partner, who is a teacher in art, so he earns an absolute pittance.
Mm-hmm.
So it was hard. It was very hard times. Luckily, we owned a house in Frederdorp, which I'd bought years before and paid for, so we were not living, trying to find money for the bond and stuff like that. But it was about the loss of the relationship. It just suddenly went from one minute to the next. It was gone.
What kind of thoughts were going through your head? I mean,
well, I thought of murder a lot. I thought of committing suicide with a blunt ruler.
Mm.
I thought of killing this man slowly. I thought also, how was I going to continue? What was I going to do? How would I find a new job? I did go for job interviews. I am terrible at interviewing. I become boring.
And I think,
how does this happen? And I tend to take over the interview, which is a bit problematic.
Because, well, you've been interviewing people for 20 years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you would imagine that you would be the perfect candidate for an interview.
I'm not.
Okay.
I'm awful. And also, I didn't like the you know, I have a gut feel about stuff.
Yes.
And I just couldn't stand them. So it must have come out on my face.
So, Jackie, you knew, obviously being in HR for 20 years or whatever, you knew a lot of the law.
I did, and
that seemed to be the natural course for you to follow.
It was, and it became a passion
to get a
for
job
me.
As an HR manager or something was not available to you. They were looking for people of color, maybe.
They were, and also I didn't like the structured sort of HR stuff. I was very used to working like a lone ranger.
Yeah, as your own boss. Yeah.
Reporting. I didn't always report to anybody. I remember one of the MDs asked me to write him a report every week. So I did. I wrote the same reports every week. and clearly it was okay.
Yeah.
Well, clearly he wasn't reading
case. I like to report in a conversation. I don't want to be sending bits of paper out to people. I want to tell you what's going on face to face. This is happening.
Okay, so Jackie, what we're going to do is we're going to break now because we have to bring the ads in. And then we're going to talk you through what you did after all this. We'll be right back.
This is CliffCentral.com. At Sibanye Gold, we've come to realize that there's nothing small about SMMEs, the small to medium-sized businesses that employ millions of people and pay billions in tax every year. Which is why we pride ourselves in providing support, leadership coaching, assistance and advice to help grow SMMEs.
You could say we're giving them a golden opportunity to grow. Sibanye Gold, we are one.
It's date night, and your wife wants you to bring Ray to bed with you. Hmm? You suggested Tyrion, or maybe even Sheldon if she fancied something a little different. But no, Ray Donovan it is. So you get your tablet and you meet her in the bedroom. Because with Showmax for 99 Rand a month, you get to watch full seasons of the biggest series. On the couch, in the kitchen, in bed. Online, anytime. So get to Showmax.com and get your 7-day free trial.
Unreal. Uncensored. Unradio.
CliffCentral.com.
Law. Like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life. With Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
I'm Gary Hertzberg with Kate Pater, and we're discussing something that I hope never happens to you. It's happened to our two guests. They've both been retrenched or made redundant. What's the difference in the two words, Jackie?
A retrenchment is usually a temporary measure, usually to cut costs or to change over as some technological advancement might have changed the nature of the work for a while or in certain ways. Redundancy is where the job itself disappears. Mm. It's no longer there.
Okay. What we want to do, Jackie, we're going to take you back and we'll come back to you on how your life has panned out. One of the biggest problems that people that have lost their jobs has to consider is where to? You know, where do they go? What kind of work can they do? Should they start their own business? There's a lady called Hester who's on the line. Hester?
Hello.
Welcome to you, Hester. Hester runs a training company, and I think if you think you've been made redundant and you dead wood, here's a way to make a killing, according to Hester. She's training people how to make coffins.
Goodness gracious me. Yes. That's that's an unusual one.
She runs a training course on how to start a coffin manufacturing business. And how popular is this? What we want to know from you, Hester, how popular is this training course? And is there a lot of money to be made in coffins, or is the business dead?
Well, you'll never run out of clients.
Hester?
Yes.
So how popular, what's happening in the coffin manufacturing business?
Well, we started this coffin manufacturing business in 1999, and we've never stopped teaching people how to make coffins and caskets. And the reason for that is that people are born every day and they die every day, which means that there's always a circle of life.
Yeah.
So when one coffin manufacturer dies, somebody else takes his or her place. There's a lot of ladies in the industry that's also manufacturing coffins and caskets, and they're not scared of manufacturing and selling the coffins and caskets.
So, I mean, you're doing a lot of training on this. Is it a good business? I mean, if we lose our jobs, do we go into coffin manufacturing?
Well, it's a coffin. You can't be buried without a coffin.
Yeah.
You must be buried in a coffin. And so, as I say, a lot of people are streaming over our borders and everything. Those people also have to be buried, which means that there's always somebody that needs a coffin.
Whether it's
the funeral parlor or whether it is the person whose family member has died and only has to be transported from one place to another. You still need a coffin.
Hester, I'm having a look. There was something online. It says that about 600,000 funerals take place in South Africa per year, which is about 1,600 funerals a day. And it generates...
It's even more than that.
I mean, we know that we've had an AIDS epidemic and more people have died than should have, Kate. I don't know why you did that.
Sorry. Something about the morbidity of this conversation.
Oh, you know, somebody has to do the burials in any case.
Yeah. Agreed, absolutely.
There's something else that you also do. You don't only train people how to manufacture coffins. You train them on how to keep this kind of business running, a funeral parlor.
Yes, that's right.
And also how to make disinfectants for the funeral parlor.
That's right, yes. Yeah.
How busy are you on that one, Hester?
A lot of people don't have the money to start a funeral parlor.
How much do you need?
About 2 million and up.
Oh, my
word. If you want a real proper funeral parlor. But there are people that are opening funeral parlors that don't have everything, but they start because they lend from other people. Say if they haven't got a fridge, they will hire a fridge from somebody else, leave the body there, and then fetch the body when the funeral has to be done.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So we're talking to Hester from Trimo, T-R-I-M-O, training.
That's right.
And
right.
You on your website, you've got a whole lot of training that you do, but I think your main...
What else do you do?
Yeah.
We also have a lot of websites that advertise all our products, and we teach people how to also manufacture a lot of products, like, for instance, making detergents and soaps. It's easy to make, doesn't cost a lot to put the business together, and it's something that is in demand every day.
So instead of me buying the Mr. Min and the Handy Andys, are you saying I can make it myself?
Sorry, just ask
instead
again?
Of buying the detergents, the Handy Andys, etc., are you saying I can make it myself?
You can manufacture it yourself and start your business.
From home?
The same as with from home. Yeah. A lot of people start from home, yeah. And as they grow, obviously you don't start big. If you start big, you're a fool, because the thing is, you don't know how the business is going to run. So you start small, and you make your business bigger as time goes past, and you've got the money to put into the business.
Okay. There you go, Kate. If you want to start a coffin manufacturing business, go to Hester for training.
There we go. Well, it appears that entrepreneurs abound.
Yeah. Jill, anything for our guests? No. All cool. Okay. Thank you very much, Hester. We've got your details. Trimo training and consulting. Thank you for your bedras. Ons praat weer. Thank you very much. Okay. So, Jackie Perkis, you were retrenched. What are you up to now?
I started a business in 2002, which was just 3 months after I got retrenched. I opened a company called The Fair Labor Practice.
Yep.
I registered it as a PTY Limited because I thought it would have more convincing push with corporates. And we've now been going for 14 years.
Sure.
My model is to do the work myself a lot. I take in young trainees from time to time, train them in and throw them out.
What did Jill do wrong? What should she have done when the guy sent her an SMS said, you're out, you're fired?
She should have challenged that decision. There are a number of requirements in law that were in place then that have been enhanced since. And she should have gone to the CCMA to challenge it.
You are helping people every day. That's your business.
That's my business.
Is it mainly
individual people
and corporates?
And I help corporates.
Yeah. If you know that your employer is in trouble, in financial trouble, they're swerving, business is down, should you come forward quickly and go and speak to them and say, listen, talk to me now because it looks like you're going to close down? Can I talk to you about a retrenchment package? Do you do that
employers
up front?
Do need to keep their employees updated. Employees generally also, I mean, they know when a company is struggling. Unfortunately, employees, you know, have the obligation of trying to keep their jobs.
Yeah.
In a declining market, it's incredibly hard. But I think if companies are open and honest with their employees and respectful, then there are ways and means of saving the day. You know, you can reduce your salaries, you can take long leave, you can
do a whole lot of options. Do I reduce my working hours? Is that something I should consider?
There are a whole lot of options available, yeah. And people need to consult on them openly and meaningfully. It's important.
Is it not often the case that what companies do is the staff starts getting a bit nervous, they go to management, they ask a question, and the response is, no, everything's fine, don't worry your pretty little head about it, and then suddenly they get hit with that.
That does happen a lot in companies.
Is that from a sort of fear from the employer's side on how productive their employees will be if they realize a retrenchment?
It's a combination of all sorts of things. Often there's a desire to to not involve employees because they're troublemakers or because they'll cost more money.
Yeah.
Retrenchment is by its very nature an expensive exercise because the legislators had in mind that you would try to avoid it at all costs. So it is expensive to retrench people. It's not expensive, though, to sit down and talk to them and exchange ideas and find
ways. That note, there's an obligation on the employer to sit with his staff and discuss it.
Absolutely.
This is done either within a small company with your staff themselves or through the unions, through shop stewards.
Correct. And they, I mean, they in-house HR, there's consultants like myself, there are trade unions, there's also there are a number of different players. And the moment a company contemplates retrenching, they have to start disclosing information.
So it's so what should have happened in Jill's case is the employer owed her
a severance package.
And he should have told her long in advance that he should have been already
including her in the conversation, saying, you know what, I'm going to change the nature of my life. I'm going to enter into another business. I'm going to shut this down. And paid her, you know, a proper severance package.
Let's talk to an attorney online, Russell. Hello, Russell. Russell Luck. Russell.
Hi.
Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Good. Russell's an attorney from Cape Town who says he was pushed from an international law firm. What do you mean by that?
It means, you know, I was working for one very large technology client. I was kind of called into the office. There was pressure on the client to have its advisors be compliant. And they called me and they said, listen, you know, you're doing a great job. But I think the combination of not getting a tax break for BEE as well as getting a tax penalty and or not being able to do business with big clients, it just couldn't justify one person staying on. So they said, we're really sorry and thanks very much.
Yeah.
So you're doing a great job, but bye.
Pardon me?
They said you're doing a great job, but bye.
Yes, basically. Okay.
So, Russell, we're going to find out what you did, and I know you've done something very smart, and we want to get to understand that. Right now, if I understand it, in the Cape, we have our own version of Silicon Cape.
Silicon Valley. Yeah.
So there's a lot of tech stuff that's going on in the Cape, and I think you're very involved in that. From a legal point of view, you are a lawyer, prominent lawyer. Just tell us, what are you doing? And how people can get involved if they lose their jobs in the tech scene in Cape Town.
Sure. So quite a few things. Yes, I'm a technology attorney. I've got a master's in technology law. It's what I chose to specialize in. And I was very lucky in the sense I was going to go overseas, had a big job lined up in US dollars. And my best friend, who is a very successful technology recruiter, so he finds devs, guys, and code, said to me, listen, before you go overseas, come on, let's go into business together. You've helped me with the legal since day one, and it's time to, you know, give it a shot. And I was quite, you know, I'd given up on the country. I thought, oh, there's no opportunities for young white males, et cetera, et cetera. And to my absolute pleasure, we kind of got the thing rolling. It's a booming business today. We employ 9 staff, and separately, I have a partner law firm with about 9 employees in it as well. And I think the trick for young entrepreneurs or people who are laid off and want to become entrepreneurs is that finding a gap in the market is easier in Africa because there's more space to do it. It's less saturated and it's a less mature economy. Mm-hmm. And you've got to just take a risk. And I think my thinking was, well, look, you know, yes, I can do well overseas, but I mean, because I kind of hit a bump in South Africa. It's like it helps you not be scared of failure because you kind of your plans had failed, they didn't work out. And if you take that lack of fear into the next phase, then you know, you can have the confidence to kind of try something new, which can be wonderful.
Okay, so are there big opportunities for people in Silicon Cape? That's what I want to know. Yeah.
Yes. Huge opportunity.
Where do they go? What do youngsters do, or people that have lost their jobs, where do they go?
Got it. So a few things. So Silicon Cape, which is all over the Cape Peninsula, it's recognized as a huge center in South Africa and Africa. Woodstock is like often where a lot of the tech companies go, but it's all trans-border, and it goes from anywhere. You'd have to kind of go online, but I think the way forward is to go to a digital agency. I encourage people to get in touch with me. You can email me and get in touch anytime. We've got a very, very deep network across the board of people who are great devs, so coders, as well as people who want to start an app. We service clients from public listed JSE clients and international clients to your startups, and we have kind of commensurate pricing schedules. And they can get in touch with me, and I can use our network to put them in touch with the right people. But that is the trick, in the sense of, you can go on a PNET site or something like that. But if you've got a good idea and a startup, people always ask, where do I begin? And yeah. I think for that, where we kind of are leaders in the field, is we're the only people that we know anyway. We give the full spectrum of services. We'll find you a dev. We can raise money for you. We can facilitate the building of the app, all the software licensing, bring you to market, et cetera, et cetera. And we love to help people.
This is a great call.
Fantastic idea.
A great call, a great idea. This is Russell Luck, L-U-C-K, technology attorney with a master's degree. Give us the website, please.
Sure. So, and just two more things I'd like to add onto that in terms of opportunities for young people directly from our business. Yeah. Our website is www.swiftmomentum.com.
Swiftmomentum, yep.
.com. Mm-hmm. And you can get in touch with any of us directly, or you'll see our staff on our website. But the two big things I'd like to say is, number one, we are going through an aggressive recruitment drive for any young people who are doing in the recruitment industry who want to kind of go through the process of who specialize in IT. So if you're someone out there who's doing IT, digital, telecoms, etc., please get in touch with us, because my business partner, David Sarenbach, is going through an aggressive drive to employ people, which is amazing. And then the other thing I'd like to say is, just as an entrepreneur, you've got to kind of get lucky. And I think one of the big things, and I've got to say a huge thank you to my partner, David Sarenbach, just because the opportunities he gave me to succeed, and he's got an incredible work ethic, it kind of as a leader. And his big thing is, he says, your number one concern is that your staff are happy, and it's a team environment, no kind of boss and staff. And the conventional thinking is, well, if you do that, you make the guys too relaxed. They're not going to be happy. They're not going to have the drive to perform well. But it's not true, because if staff are happy, actually, it's in your best interest, because they'll perform harder. And I think he's very kind of visionary and good with people in that way. So
excellent, Russell. We've got your details. Russell Luck, L-U-C-K,
Cape Town. Surname.
Cape Town, this is a great opportunity for you guys. Please, if you need to get somewhere, please get in touch with Russell. If we Google Russell Luck, will we pick you up? Swift Momentum.
Absolutely, you'll pick me up.
Many thanks to you, Russell, and we'll talk to you again.
What a spectacular idea to actually do that, to make a business out of facilitating other people starting up new businesses. Well done, Russell.
Yeah, startup companies and high-tech corps are all moving to Cape Town.
Amazing stuff.
We're going to be the next Silicon Valley. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Fantastic.
Yeah. Okay, so Jackie, you now run this very successful HR business, and you help people.
Yes.
So it was all worth it in the end, wasn't it?
Very, very, very worth it. I have a passion for helping people, for finding justice, for making sure that things are equitably done and that people are treated fairly.
Yeah, that's Jackie Perks, P-E-R-K-E-S, Perkus.
Perkus, right.
Of the Fair Labor Practice.
That's correct.
And you're in Norwood.
We're in Norwood.
Now, we'll come back to you. Let's talk to Jill. Jill, I saw, it's plastered all over the place, you spoke to 1,500 boys at Pretoria Boys High School the other day.
That's correct.
What was it about?
I was giving them my keynote, Bulletproof, which you do know about, Gary.
Yes.
And I share the story of what happened to me in a home invasion, and was shot and was left for dead and survived,
not just a tenacious bullet that basically got me twice, but I survived the Joburg gen. So I...
And two retrenchments.
And two retrenchments.
And being a single mum.
Hence why, bulletproof. And I share my story of resilience. Mm. And I tell people what one can do just to download the apps that I downloaded. Of to recap again, remember courage and tenacity.
Absolutely.
And acceptance. Yeah. And patience. That's one I have to kind of download quite often. Mm. And the last
one... And if you want to develop them, you can go to Russell Luck.
Absolutely. And faith. And you know what? Those things can be applied to life. It doesn't matter if you're a corporate, if you're a schoolboy, a schoolgirl, a sportsman. Just applying these things and taking it and knowing and having the courage and the faith to carry on.
This is what I read, Jill. It says here, I cannot describe my goosebumps at receiving a 5-minute standing ovation. I'm blessed and forever grateful. And that's to get a 5-minute ovation from schoolboys.
Yes.
Is something. Because normally they walk out and they can't wait to get out of there.
That's what I was terrified of.
No, that's well done to you. So notwithstanding your retrenchment and being made to feel worthless, you've overcome. That's Jill Linsell. Jill, what are you doing? Are you talking all over the place? How can we get to book you? Where do we find you?
In fact, my website has just very recently been launched. It's called bulletproofjill.co.za. I also have a Facebook page, also Bulletproof Jill, where
it's G I L L.
Yes, G I L L I A N. And I am a resilience coach. I go into companies, and I'm also, it was music to my ears to hear Russell speaking about having happy employees. It's about employee engagement because you cannot be successful in your customer service if your employees aren't happy.
No
and
one's talking about poor Hester. Everyone's talking about Russell. Didn't you want to talk about poor Hester and her coffin?
I'm pleading the fifth.
Jill, you were telling us that when you go into these companies to talk, you see so many people that are just kind of on the brink of being retrenched. And they come up to you and they talk to you about it. And
I have. And
you know, what advice do you give people?
Never stop believing in yourself and finding your strengths, understanding that you are worth something. And it is difficult to carry on, as we've spoken before now, all those emotions that you go through. But just keeping it going, keeping your talents, don't stagnate because you might find another opportunity. So you've got to keep your mind active. You've got to keep yourself just focused on that dream.
The little bit of advice I can give is, and I learned this from clients of mine, if you have been retrenched or about to be, please speak to your creditors, the banks, the people that you owe money to. Mm. People would rather, if you came to them and explained it, they're more prone to understand than if you back off and stay away, which is what most people do. They're too embarrassed to come forward and explain to the bank. And generally, the banks don't want to take legal action unless they absolutely have to.
Gary,
so they try and work it through. I mean, you went through
In that retrenchment that I went through, I did have one or two accounts.
Yeah.
Woolworths was one of them.
Yeah.
And there was a credit card that I had. And I contacted them. I wrote them a letter and I said to them, this is what has happened. I understand that I've got amounts outstanding. And we came up with a solution and a payment plan in terms of getting through.
You get this, Jackie, all the time.
I get it all the time. I think, you know, not every retrenchment is unfair or every dismissal is unfair. One has to understand that employers do follow the rules to a large extent. And the CCMA is not a bank, neither is the Labour Court.
Yeah.
So people often come into my office thinking they're going to get trillion, zillion dollars and stuff like that. And I have to dumb them down and make sure that they understand the consequences of what they're doing. If there is no merit to a case, we don't touch it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't advise employers to follow a checklist approach, tick the boxes. We advise employers to meaningfully consult properly with their employees because there are always opportunities to avoid retrenchments in many, many, many cases. You just change the way of work.
There's the obligation on the employer to offer any kind of employment within the company.
Yes.
Even if it's downgraded, they have to offer that.
There are obligations, exactly. And
so if you're a manager and they say, well, there's a supervisor position, You have to offer that.
You do offer it. You do. Yeah. And sometimes that does come with a sacrifice, like you're going to take a 25% cut in salary. But that might be a temporary solution to closing a business completely or a division. And I think people need to be more open to those solutions. Because I think having a job today is better than having no job at
all. Yeah. When a company goes insolvent as well, Jackie, you know this, SARS gets the first bite of whatever there is.
Correct.
So if there's only assets of R1 million and SARS has a claim of R1 million against the company, they take R1 million, the employees get El Zilcho. Is that the way it is?
It is the way it is, unfortunately. It's SARS, the banks, the employees become preferred creditors. Mm. But, you know, often in a liquidation that can land up with them paying in. Mm. So it really, you know, one really needs to think about that very carefully. Before advising an employee to list as a preferred
I think
creditor.
That's why we said earlier, go forward and speak to your employer before it goes insolvent.
Exactly.
So that SARS, you get in before SARS.
Yeah.
And try and negotiate.
I've just done a massive retrenchment, 360 people over 6 months in Nelspruit.
It breaks your heart, doesn't it? You have to fire people very often, don't
you?
Yeah,
pretty much.
How do you feel? We haven't got much time, but how do you feel when you tell a guy, sorry, you're...
The most important thing is to, even when you're firing a person for misconduct, is to ensure that they retain their dignity. And you do it inside. It's just the way they're spoken to. They're not spoken to in any rude way. Yeah. We like to tell them, look, you know, your passion's not here. You clearly can't do this job well.
Yeah.
You know, there must be other places you can find work. And you just try and help them keep their dignity and be respectful at all times.
You've got to keep your emotion as well.
And you dumb down your emotion. You cannot be emotional.
Many thanks to you. It's been very nice talking to both of you, Gillian Linsell and to Jackie Perkis. Many thanks, ladies. You've kind of spilt your guts telling us the bad times, but things have improved. So it shows it can improve and it does improve.
Absolutely, 100%.
To Kate Pater.
Thank you. And if you don't mind, I'd just like to make a mention. I want to send my condolences to the Pickering family, to all of his family and friends. He was a very special boy. I only knew him as a little boy, but Christopher Thomas Pickering passed away last night. So to everybody, Chris, rest in peace.
Okay. I'm with you on that one, although I don't know who you're talking about. To Brigitte Meyer, my researcher, many thanks to her. Duncan Mabaso. And if you want to come forward and give us your story, we'd like to air as many of these wonderful stories as we can. This awareness that we try and do.
That's it.
Does wonders,
Please email us. It's lordcliffcentral.com. Any comments, suggestions, or stories that you want to hear.
Good. Until next Tuesday at 12 noon, I'm Gary Hertzberg.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on cliffcentral.com.